So there you have them. 9 ways to transition from one section to another. Make sure you know all of them and when to use them. Shit test number 1. The friend test. One of the best ways of learning to write with the addiction formula is giving your song to a friend of yours and asking them to draw an energy curve for your song. You should briefly explain hype and tension. Then analyze the curve they have drawn. Is it what you expected? Let's do it together to show you what I mean. We're going to listen to the full song and I'm going to drop in from time to time to bring your attention back to the energy curve. So here we have a little bit of tension. Energy goes up for the verse. Vocals come in. I hear your voice in every picture on my phone. They say time. Then we flatline. Nothing new happens. I feel you next to me, even though you're gone. Just a little bit of tension. Hype goes up a little bit in the music. But the hype of the vocals go down, which makes this whole section actually go down in energy. So here we get a tiny jump in hype. Probably means that we're going to move towards a big chorus. Again, flatlining here, which is totally fine, by the way. So then here we have a jump, no tension this time. Again, flatlining, totally fine. And now watch out. So what we just heard was a false promise. We had some tension leading up to the chorus, and then the hype just kind of drops back down to the same level. So that was a drop. Again, flatlining. At this point, I kind of want to see a little bit more energy, to be honest. A little bit of tension. Again, hype goes up a little bit. And again, a false promise for the chorus. Here we get to a drop. Second, the vocal set, this is building in hype. And then we end on a surprise, meaning we have a little tom fill at the end there that builds tension towards something, and then we drop to a lower hype level. In this case, no hype level. Does all of this make sense? Now go do it with your songs. Question: are there hit songs out there not using the addiction formula? Answer: first of all, there are no pop hits that I'm aware of that don't use it at all, although country and folk music are another story. It really seems to be used all over the board, a real rule of hit songwriting, you could say. But there are a few hits that use it only about 90% of the time, although they are rare. Here are a couple of examples of these songs. Mark Ronson, Uptown Funk featuring Bruno Mars. While largely following the addiction formula, the first and second verse have identical energy levels, which makes the beginning of the second verse an excellent opportunity to turn the song off. On top of that, the instrumental section should be the high point of the song, but after the extreme build-up in the pre-chorus, it kind of falls flat. We know this as overshooting, and we also know to never do it if we're following the formula. The Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling. Although the song does use tension and hype very effectively for the most part, the second verse is lower in energy than the first, and the second and third chorus are very far apart. Height changes only occur every 16 bars instead of every 8 bars. Beyoncé, Run the World, and 7-Eleven. The way the attention of the listener is guided through these songs is phenomenal, albeit unusual. They don't follow the 1-2-3 rule, and chorus and verse don't stand out as clear energy peaks or troughs. Summary. The 4 steps to designing your energy curve are 1. Determine the amount of your big moments. 3 is always a good start. 2. Placement. End big. Globally increase tension. Use the 1-2-3 rule. Introduce 1. Repeat 2. Change on 3. 3. Smooth out the build-ups. Use hype, tension, or a combination of the two to accomplish this. And 4. Smooth out the transitions. The possibilities are jump, smooth, drop, surprise, overshoot, false promise, flatline, lift, and negative tension. Now, I know you're probably itching to find out how to set energy levels in your song, but before we get to that, I want to share one more thing with you. The most popular energy curve in the world. Hollywood's secret formula. The most popular form in the world. In this chapter, I want to introduce you to the most popular and effective energy curve there is in songwriting. There are many more curves that work, but I always keep this Hollywood curve in the back of my mind when I'm writing, even when I use a different curve. I'm almost 100% sure that you've used this curve before, but I want to show you why it works so well and point out a couple of things you can do to make it even more powerful, so it drills down right into your audience's mind. Screenwriters have perfected the art of storytelling over decades. They know exactly how to unravel a mystery, when to be funny and when to be dramatic, how to make us fall in love with the main characters, and how to make us hate the bad guy. In his book Screenplay from 1979, Sitfield introduced the world's now most popular structure to film. Nearly every movie you know follows it. It consists of 3 basic acts. 1. Setup, where we are introduced to the hero and his problem, sometimes called the inciting incident. 2. Confrontation, where the shit hits the fan. Our hero's attempts to bring the adventure to a halt only result in more complications. And 3. Resolution, where the hero has to face his ultimate obstacle, and in doing so either succeeds or fails. Whether we are talking about The Lion King, The Matrix, or Insidious, this structure is always present. But why is it so effective? In the words of Daniel McInerney, the central reason why three-act structure resonates so profoundly with the human spirit, such that we never tire of its rhythms, is that it allows us, in a most compressed and evident way, to contemplate our lives in miniature. Three-act structure is the structure of life. It is the imitation of ourselves being thrown into an adventure not of our choosing, and of working out a resolution to it, in which we ultimately either succeed or fail. Just an interesting observation here. Did you notice Daniel's choice of words in this article? Resonate, rhythms? Let's take a close look at what the three-act structure has in common with music. To illustrate my point and to make this whole shebang a little more entertaining, I wrote you a little script following a structure. Your job is to find commonalities between this story and standard song structure. Ready? Let's go. Act 1. We get to meet John, our hero. John is a family man in a midlife crisis. He's bitter and also a bit of a wimp. He lives his life not knowing that within a day, everything will be different. The first couple of minutes have to win people over, or they will leave the theater. This opening sets the mood for the rest of the film and introduces our characters. It marks the lowest energy level in the entire movie. When John hears that he's being drafted, a world ends for him. He doesn't want to go. He has to say goodbye to all his loved ones. Just as we begin to like our character and want him to be happy, they are confronted with a problem. Something rattles their status quo. Act 2. John arrives in the middle of a raging war. He's confronted with death and misery. Act 2 typically occurs at the 30-minute mark, after a fourth of the film. This is where we fully realize the weight of our problem for the first time. It is the second moment after the introduction that can make or break a film, as it sets the highest level of energy. Combined with the introduction, this gives the audience an idea of the dynamic range of the movie that they're seeing. After standing out as the worst soldier in his unit, John realizes he has to toughen up if he wants to make it out alive. He trains hard and, what do you know, becomes the first in his unit to learn how to assemble his gun in under a minute. When a fellow soldier gets into serious trouble during an exercise, John is the only one brave enough to help him, which earns him the respect of his fellow soldiers, and what used to be a unit becomes friends. Things slowly sink in. The character tries to deal with the problem. He slowly gets used to this new situation and becomes a different person. He has to, because trouble is lurking around the corner. The midpoint. The big battle comes, and John's unit fights hard and emerges triumphantly. John is Skyping with his family, who is relieved that everything is okay, when suddenly a group of people enter his tent and kidnap John, killing one of his friends. Cut off from his unit, John is on his own. The exact middle of the movie, often called the 60-minute mark or 60-page mark, is where a second big moment happens. It comes in strong, and we naturally assume it will be the big finale, but something unexpected happens. We move into new terrain. Act 3. John is kept prisoner for a long time, grows a beard, and loses a lot of weight. After half a year of imprisonment, he finally sees a chance to escape. He manages to run for about an hour before they find him. When everything seems lost and John is to be executed on the spot, suddenly bullets start flying and one of his evildoers falls to the ground dead. It's his unit that's come back for him. Together, they overrun their enemies. John returns as a war hero. When everything seems as though we couldn't possibly go back to normality, our second turning point happens, and things very quickly move towards the climax. John takes a flight back home. When he sees his family, he's too tired to smile. He's not the man he used to be. The ending can be a big finale, or it can end on a smaller, more personal note. It returns to the status quo of the introduction, but since a lot of things have happened in the course of our story, things are slightly different. This is where character development really becomes obvious. See how well that translates to songs? See how the energy moves up and down similarly, how the arrangement reflects the story? Do you see the energy curve, the 1-2-3 rule, the way tension and hype interact in the story? So what can we learn from this Hollywood formula? Well, it basically gives us a great energy curve to work with. The Hollywood curve looks like this. There are three pretty much evenly spaced energy peaks. The peaks are preceded by troughs that build up to the peaks, and the second trough is higher in energy than the first. The biggest energy peak is last, the lowest point of energy is in the first act, and after the second energy peak, the energy goes way down. You can probably already tell that what we're talking about here is the form intro, verse, verse continued, pre-chorus, chorus, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, bridge, bridge continued, chorus, chorus, outro. To recap, this is an energy curve that has been used and fine-tuned by screenwriters for over a century. It marks the epitome of this generation's storytelling. So in other words, it is designed specifically to captivate an audience. The closer you are to this structure, the more your song will take advantage of its benefits. Have you ever had the pleasure of falling asleep during a movie? Then you know that if a movie does not deliver enough big moments of gratification, you are likely to zone out sooner or later. If we subconsciously feel like a section in a song is going on for too long, we get restless. The need for change is so great that we create it ourselves by changing the station. Screenwriters call this pacing. For example, as a writer for action films or thrillers, you are expected to have a big moment every 10 pages, which equals roughly every 10 minutes. Otherwise, your movie will drag. Luckily, this principle is already built into the Hollywood form. Let's go literal here for a second and assume a movie is 2 hours long. If we need a moment every 10 minutes, that gives us 12 moments for the whole movie. Well, how many moments does a song have? Assuming that one section is 8 bars and not counting the beginning of the song, of course. The first moment would be the beginning of the verse, 1, followed by verse continued, 2, the beginning of the pre-chorus, 3, the start of the chorus, 4, the drop to the second verse, 5, the beginning of the second pre-chorus, 6, the bang of the second chorus, 7, the beginning of the primary bridge, 8, the primary bridge continued, 9, the start of the third chorus, 10, the repetition of the chorus, 11, and the beginning of the outro, 12. Notice that the beginning of the second chorus, the midpoint, is at exactly half. See how close the most famous song structure in the world is to 3-act structure? Weird, isn't it? How mankind subconsciously produces things following the same principles over and over again? Summary. The most popular energy curve in pop music by far is the Hollywood curve. A song written with the Hollywood formula is structured as follows. Intro, verse, verse continued, pre-chorus, chorus, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, primary bridge continued, chorus, chorus, outro. Now let's zoom in a little bit more and go from the whole movie to its scenes in the next chapter. So we're now slowly transitioning from theory to practical songwriting. And scene. Let's write a thriller. Where we will look at each section of the Hollywood structure from a dramatic standpoint and see how we can keep them interesting. If you want to master songwriting, the one thing you have to completely internalize is understanding the different sections of your song. I will showcase how the Hollywood structure works here and leave it up to you to apply what you learn to your own structures. The intro. The intro really holds a special place in dramaturgy as it presents the status quo. We get to see our hero before he is thrown into all that drama. We get to experience him in his day-to-day life. The screenwriter's job here is to make sure that our hero seems like someone we would like to be friends with. If the writer fails to do this, we will simply not care enough to see what happens to him next. In music, this is equally true. With the intro, we set our status quo, show the listener what our song looks like at its lowest energy level. This is why it's much harder to write songs that start strong. Where do you go from there? Sound is very important during these first few seconds of our song. It's like our hero. We either like him or we do not. So make sure your instruments sound great from the get-go. The first verse. Our now beloved best friend has a problem. A series of events is set in motion that will lead to a big bang very soon. The hero tries to get out of the situation, but only winds up deeper in the rabbit hole. The lyrics introduce what our song is about. The singer's tone of voice shows us how he feels. We see he has something he needs to get off his chest. He's vaguely describing his situation. Our anticipation rises. We want to know what's going on, want to know what the fuss is all about. Just like in the movies, the verse is there to introduce us to the problem and at the same time foreshadow the chorus. The biggest mistake you can make in the verse, really in arranging in general, is to write without looking at the big picture. Look at the three acts again. The first act is not a horizontal line. Instead, see the verse as a springboard into the chorus. It is a period of anticipation, there to increase the excitement until the big bang. So build hype and add tension. The first pre-chorus. The pre-chorus is, as the name already suggests, not a self-contained section. It is just a transitional bridge. See it as a kind of modulation from the verse to the chorus. Even more so than the verse, it only has one job to do, creating tension. If there is ever a section in which you can get out all of your tension techniques, this is it. So an electronic producer might introduce an uplifter or noise sweep here, which will increase the tension. Similarly, the melody typically goes higher, which increases hype and therefore forms a pivot point between a low verse and a high chorus. The first chorus. The first turning point in film displays the scope of the movie to the audience. If it is too small, we will expect the rest of the movie to be small. On the other hand, we do not want to oversell it either, as we want people to feel satisfied about our ending as well. It is a difficult balance act of figuring out just how big your first chorus should be. I have found the following to work well. Write your last chorus first. Make it as big as possible and copy-paste it to create your first chorus. Now strip out everything that isn't strictly needed to convey the feeling of gratification. Maybe your percussion can go, or a pad. Maybe you don't need the backing vocals just yet. Never delete for this kind of thing. Always mute. You will want to try out different combinations. Make sure you always listen in context. There needs to be a noticeable jump in hype from pre-chorus to chorus. If it's not strong enough, either thin out the pre-chorus, this in turn might mean thinning out the verse as well, or add back elements to the chorus. The interlude. Like the pre-chorus, the interlude or post-chorus is another type of transitional bridge that can be used to transition from a high-energy chorus to a less energetic second verse. However, unlike the pre-chorus, it typically does have its own purpose. It is almost always instrumental and focused on groove. Although mostly used in rock music as a means of reintroducing the main riff, it is also often used in pop music. Here it often takes the role of a dance part or introduces the hook. For examples, listen to Katy Perry's Dark Horse or Rihanna's Umbrella. The second verse. After the first big moment hit us, we realize we are in big, big trouble. Now what do we want to see? Do you want to see the hero go back to his everyday life and pretend that nothing has happened? Or do you want to see them deal with their problem? This is called character development in writing. We want our hero to go through some changes. No one goes through a big bang without rethinking their life, so returning to problem level feels almost inhumane. While the first chorus is the hardest to write, the second verse is the hardest to arrange. Too many writers lose all their pep here and go back to the energy level of their first verse. Remember, you want to be moving forward. Find a way to make your second verse bigger than your first while keeping it in anticipation mode. Implied tension is an excellent way of doing this, as we will discuss when we talk about arrangement. The second pre-chorus. The same goes as for the first pre-chorus. Just make sure you build to the second chorus. After the more intense second verse, the second pre-chorus is often also more energetic than the first. However, its role as a pivot point has not changed. The second chorus. When the shit hits the fan for a second time in our movie, make sure you're not just rehashing the first chorus. Drama needs to keep going up. Find a subtle way to make your second chorus slightly bigger than the first. For example, unmute one or two tracks or use any other technique from part two of this book. The primary bridge, aka bridge, middle eight, or C part. Imagine you are the person who invented the three-act scheme. If you want your finale to have the proper bang, what can you do after the second chorus to make that bang even more impactful? You have to go smaller. Problem is, you can't return to your status quo. Your hero has been through too much. Just going back to another verse feels anticlimactic and predictable. So if you have to go down, what do? You go into unexplored terrain. You completely change the game. This is the moment where Jenko and Schmidt from 22 Jump Street turn against each other, when the villagers in Beauty and the Beast start their hunt for the Beast. It's the moment that completely changes the game. Nothing will ever be the same. The status quo seems destroyed. Honestly, you can't go wrong here in terms of ideas. Anything is possible and people will be okay with it. It is a good moment to bring in new sounds, such as solo instruments or a rap, change keys, go crazy. Primary bridges are a great moment for creativity. Do not slack them off as not important, though. The primary bridge does have a purpose. It is there to provide contrast, to show a different side of the problem, to surprise. It is up to you whether you want to go small or big. Just make sure you introduce enough tension to drive your song towards your last chorus. The third and fourth chorus, or finale. This is it, the moment everyone's been waiting for. The big shootout, the wedding, the tragic death, the realizations that Christmas miracles do happen. Usually in separate films, though. A movie's finale needs to be huge and satisfying so people leave the theater telling everyone what a great time they had. The third chorus is completely dependent on what happens in chorus number four, so we will look at that one first. The fourth chorus, or finale, is not as set in stone as the rest of the song. Whereas before, everything needed to be organized, at this point, we have already heard the chorus three times, and we can allow ourselves to go a little crazy. Your party is nearing its end. The men wear their ties around their heads, and the women start taking off their shoes. This part is really for everyone who loved the party and who wants the night to end on a high point. No reason to be shy here, because everyone who wasn't into it from the start has left already anyways. If people wouldn't want you to go crazy at this point, they too would have already left. Don't fall into the trap of just repeating your chorus two more times here. There needs to be some kind of build-up in the last chorus, however subtle. Here are a couple of examples that work well in this specific context, and we will cover many more in part two. Add new instruments. Guitar solos, strings, horn parts, synths, backing vocals all work well. Change the melody slightly so it hits more top notes. This really builds up some energy and puts your last chorus in the highest overall range. Let the background vocals take over the main melody, panned all the way to the sides, and your main singer ad-libs over it. You are creating your energy by effectively just adding another layer on top of your chorus, and by really opening up your stereo panorama. This is a great technique because it gives your audience the chance to sing along with the background choir if they just want to sing the chorus. Change the lyrics. This approach is overlooked by many, but it works very well. Introducing new lyrics to your chorus is a great technique because it gives you a chance to lyrically finish your story. For examples, Chex Stain's Fill Me Up and Tina Dico's The Other Side. Instead of adding to the last chorus, it is also possible to subtract hype from the third chorus. This way, you still get your precious rise in energy for the last chorus. Think Sam Smith's Stay With Me or Linkin Park's Until It's Gone. The outro. This is the moment where John from our little movie earlier gets to meet his family again. It is a more personal ending that revolves around the character rather than the story. It simulates a return to the status quo. On the surface, it appears as though John is back where he started, but everything is different, of course. Our hero has been through some life-changing events that have made him a stranger to his family. The outro is a way of ending on a small and personal note. By rehashing the intro, you come full circle, which can be used very effectively if you want to add a closed ending to your story. The main thing to keep in mind is to keep your outros short. This is the leave them wanting more part. Do not keep this going longer than you absolutely have to. Other ways to end your song. There are a lot of other options available to you that I want to quickly mention before we move on. End on a fade out. Even though fade outs are going out of fashion, this technique still pops up in the charts every now and then. It suggests a kind of, and they lived happily ever after ending. Ending cold. This refers to ending with a big hit at the end or right after your finale. This can feel a little unsatisfying, a bit like watching Liam Neeson finally find and save his daughter in Taken, and then not getting the satisfaction of seeing them be happy about it. But it has a lot of power. End on another post-chorus. This will end your song on a groove. Why is this a great technique? Because like a Pavlovian dog, the listener is subconsciously conditioned to think that after the post-chorus, he will hear the verse again. If that doesn't happen, it's like they practically have to play your track again. Summary. The first verse introduces the song's theme and leads up to the chorus. The pre-chorus acts as a pivot point between verse and chorus. It needs to create tension. The first chorus should be the smallest of all choruses, but bigger than the first pre-chorus. The interlude is rhythm-based and acts as a soft landing from chorus to second verse. The second verse needs to be bigger than the first verse. Move forward. The second chorus should be slightly bigger than the first. The primary bridge should go into unexplored territory. Anything goes as long as it leads nicely into your finale. The third chorus is highly dependent on the fourth and should thus be arranged after it. And finally, possible ways to end your song include an outro, a fade out, cold endings, and post-chorus endings. Alright, so you got an idea what the Hollywood curve looks like and how it works. Now let's get to the good stuff. Let's get practical. It's technique time. Part 2. Elements. In this part, you will learn everything you need to know about the six elements of songwriting. Arrangement, harmony, rhythm, part writing, lyrics, and production. Introduction to part 2. Now we're talking. If music really is a language, as many people say, then let's see what we can learn from communication that could be of interest to a writing process. There are four steps to any form of communication. There's the conception of thought and encryption through language on your side, and a decryption and resulting thought or feeling on the side of your counterpart. For example, a successful piece of communication on a first date would be thought, I want us to get to know each other, encryption, did you know that I'm really into dinosaurs, and on the other side, decryption, she must really like dinosaurs, thought, I now know something about her that I didn't know before. Hashtag communication kicks ass. Whereas communication gone wrong would be thought, I want us to get to know each other. Encryption, did you know that I'm really into dinosaurs? And on the other side, decryption, oh my god, she has a weird fetish. Thought, I am not a dinosaur and therefore not her type. Hashtag Tyrannosaurus Sex. In this case, the decryption part went wrong, which in turn might be because the encryption wasn't clear enough. As songwriters, we face much the same problem. If one of the steps is not executed well, it will lead to confusion and most likely skepticism. The four steps translate to music as thought, the story you want to tell, in other words, your energy curve, encryption, your finished production, decryption, how your audience perceives or understands your song, and thought, how your audience likes or dislikes your song. We really can't control step number four, but we can take control of steps one and two, and if we do a good job with these, then step three will take care of itself. Let's combine this idea with what we've learned so far. If you want your audience to understand you, you need something to communicate first. This statement does not necessarily have to be expressed through lyrics. Music alone is perfectly capable of doing this, but your song needs intent, a story. As we have learned, this means playing with anticipation and gratification and choosing the right moments to switch between the two. This story can be expressed visually through energy curves. We have learned 9 paths that our curve can take. Jump, smooth, drop, surprise, overshoot, false promise, flatline, lift, and negative tension. This curve is our starting point, and all the elements of our song will follow it. The next step is to express the energy curve in music. This can be seen as the encryption part of telling your story. As mentioned before, if your listener could draw your energy curve after listening to your song, you did a good job encrypting. If, however, he draws a different, less musically beautiful curve, this means we failed in telling our story. The story itself might be fantastic, but if we can't express it through our music, it is practically worthless. Part 2 of this book is all about telling your story. I call this process riding the energy curve, because if done right, your song will take your listener on a ride. This is also why I explain hype and tension as gears and gas. We will go through each element of songwriting and see how it relates to your energy curve. Moving from the most general all the way down to the details, we will talk about the 6 elements of songwriting: arrangement, harmony, rhythm, part writing, lyrics, and production, and see how we can use each element to increase or decrease hype or introduce tension. A couple of notes. The following lists of techniques are by no means complete. My focus for this book was on commercial pop music, so if you write rock or country, I'm sure you can think of more techniques to add to the graphs. And I openly invite you to do so. I am convinced that once you get it, you can figure out where they belong. Measuring energy is not a precise science, and it doesn't need to be. I've said it before, but I want to say it again. Everything we will talk about is relative. If you play me a section of a song without letting me hear what comes before or after, it is impossible for me to determine how high in energy this section is. The chapters of part 2 can be listened to out of order if you so desire, so if you're mostly interested in rhythm, you can jump there right now. I do, however, recommend listening to the chapter on arrangement first, because it contains a passage on implied tension, which comes back in the other chapters. It is important to understand that all the elements work together in a finished song. One element alone doesn't determine the look of your energy curve. It is rather the interplay of various elements acting at the same time. So even though one element in your song may go down in hype, the overall energy can still go up if another element increases in hype. Remember, not all techniques are equally powerful. Some barely change your energy, and others can have a lot of impact. Arrangement. When it comes to setting hype levels, there is no other element as powerful as arrangement. The art of deciding where certain instruments come in, what they play, and when they drop out, is one of the most important skills a songwriter could learn. And it is not just useful in theory. Literally every single song that has ever been a commercial success uses arrangement as its main tool to set hype levels. So let's take what we learned when we studied energy curves and apply it here to find out what makes a successful arrangement. 1. Give your song direction by increasing the hype level every 4 or 8 bars. This creates anticipation. 2. Make your energy peaks, moments of gratification, stand out above the rest of the song. 3. Tension can be used to further smooth out transitions. Setting energy levels. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty. The question is, how do we use arrangement to reflect our energy curve? Part 1. Hype. The rule is, the fuller the texture, the higher the hype. Texture refers to the overall sound at a given moment during your song. So for example, a texture may consist of drums, a synth, and a bass. To make things a little easier, we will start by looking at just the melodic instruments, which we will divide into 3 frequency spectra. We will discuss drums and percussion a little later. Once you have understood the frequency spectra, I suggest dividing into more specific parts, such as sub, lows, low mids, high mids, highs, and air. This will give you even more control over your textures. But for now, the frequency spectra are lows, which translates to bass or the bass notes on the piano, mids, which includes the piano's left-hand chords and rhythm guitar, and highs, the right hand on the piano or the guitar higher up the neck. So let's take each possible texture and put it in order from lightest to fullest, or put another way, from lowest to highest hype. Starting with no instruments at all, which you may remember from the intros of Lords Royal or Avril Lavigne's Girlfriend. The next step is adding lows, as in Beyoncé's Partition. Moving up in hype is only using the highs, as in the first verse of Miley Cyrus's We Can't Stop, or the intro of Snow Patrol's Chasing Cars. If we only use mids, we increase the hype further still, as in the intro to Sam Smith's Stay With Me. Now we get to the combinations of frequency spectra. You may know mid-high from the intro to John Legend's All of Me. Even more hype lies in the low-mid combo, which you can hear a little later in Sam Smith's Stay With Me. Next, we get the low-high combination, which you may have heard in the chorus to Skrillex's First of the Year. And finally, we have the combination of all 3 frequency spectra. You can hear the low-mid-high combo in the choruses to Lady Gaga's Venus or Katy Perry's E.T. So how can we use this information? Well, if you're writing a song using just a piano and you want to increase your hype level, analyze what you are playing to see where you can go. So maybe you're playing high chords in the right hand and a low bass in the left. So the only way to build hype through arrangement is filling out the middle. This could be done by using arpeggios in either hand to cover a wider range of pitches. Remember the days of stride patterns and pianists hitting high notes on the piano with their feet? That wasn't just energizing to watch. It also sounded like it. If you have more than one instrument, hype can also be increased by adding an instrument in the same frequency spectrum. While this won't make you very happy when mixing, you can create more unique levels of hype this way. The more textures you know and where they are in the hype spectrum, the more possibilities you have for telling your story. So study your favorite songs and listen to their textures, and then just copy them. As long as you're using it in a new context, this is not stealing, it's learning. Trading space. If you found this audiobook through my YouTube channel, you will have heard me talk about trading space before. Since clever use of this technique can be used to amplify hype as well, here's a basic rundown for you. When I arrange a song, I visualize my performers on a stage. Every track in my production has its place there. The drums, bass, piano, vocals, but also less noticeable instruments like the shaker, woodblocks, or backing vocals. On the stage, there is a spotlight. This is whatever your listener pays attention to at any given moment in your song. Since we can only truly focus on one thing at a time, the rule of trading space states that only one instrument may ever be in the spotlight. So if you want your song to feature a guitar lick in the verse, the singer will have to move out of the spotlight to make room for the guitarist, even if it's only for half a second. Then, once the guitarist is done, he trades space with the singer again. Now, I'm not saying I never violate this rule, but it does help a ton when writing parts. The result is a cleaner arrangement where each instrument can be heard distinctively without it interfering with the rest of the song. Long story short, how can you use trading space for setting hype levels? Simple. The more you use it in a section, the higher the hype. This is where doo-wop choirs, blues licks, and call and response come from. But using this technique does not have to sound old-fashioned. On the contrary, it's actually one of my favorite recipes for writing energizing melodies. Listen to Bruno Mars' 24 Karat Magic or the brilliant Don't Hold the Wall by Justin Timberlake. Part 2. Tension. To introduce tension to a section, you have three options. First, you can thicken the texture, for example, adding an instrument halfway through a section, or an instrument from the next part comes in early, what is often called a pickup. Second, you can thin out the texture. Taking out instruments in the middle of a section creates a hole in the music that wants to be filled in the next section, which gives us what? Tension. Think of the dead silence right before the chorus of Miley Cyrus' Wrecking Ball, for example. And third, we're back to trading space. Increasing the frequency of your trades towards the end of a section is an underused technique in modern pop music that can sound very fresh. Remember Busta Rhymes' rap from Look At Me Now? Listen to how he leads into it. Yep, you got it. Trading space. Part 3. Imply tension. The third kind of tension. There's a third option here, which is a little bit harder to grasp. I'm talking about something I call implied tension. Learning how to use this kind of tension can be tricky, but it is very rewarding. It is more subtle than straight-up tension and can be used to add interest to a section. Even though it is heavily featured in the top 200, and even more now than it was when the Addiction Formula first released, not a lot of people know about it or use it in their songs. Do you remember the last time you were angry with your significant other and for some reason you were stuck in the same room together? What did you do? Maybe you confronted her. Told her exactly what you were thinking. Of course, she snaps back at you, you get back at her, and both of you get louder and louder. It's loud, clear, and straight to the point. This is regular tension. But maybe you didn't fight it out. Maybe you just sucked up all your anger and gave each other the stink eye. You know the feeling. Even though not a single word is being said, there is tension in the room. But it's not the same kind as when you were openly fighting. This is a subtle, conceived tension. When you could hear a pin drop, that's implied tension. Structurally, implied tension is very different from regular tension because it is stationary. You don't look angrier and angrier at each other with every second. No, the tension comes from the fact that you are keeping quiet. To really understand implied tension in music, listen to the following songs, or if you know them, recall how they made you feel. Naturally, you can find this list on holisticsongwriting.com/addiction audio as well. The verse to Taylor Swift's Blank Space. The first verse of The Other Side by Jason Derulo. 43 seconds into the Deftones' Sex Tape. The chorus to Janae Aiko's The Worst. Tove Lo's Habits, Hippie Sabotage Remix, from 48 seconds to 1 minute 03. Double X, Double Y, Double X. About You, until about the 1 minute and 35 mark. Avril Lavigne's Girlfriend, the opening chorus. Justin Bieber's Beauty and a Beat, from 64 seconds to 1 minute. Can you feel how all these sections want to go somewhere? They all pull you towards the next section and thus mark periods of anticipation. And yet there's nothing building up or being taken away with the sections. So why do the arrangements to these songs sound tense? Let's look at them. There is a noticeable absence of bass in Blank Space, Sex Tape, The Worst, Girlfriend, and About You. The groove in Sex Tape is missing its bass drum. This is even more apparent in Beauty and a Beat, where the sidechain attenuates the space where the bass drum should be, called a ghost kick. The groove in The Other Side has no snare drum. The grooves of Blank Space, The Worst, and About You leave a lot of space. There's no hi-hat. Girlfriend does it too, but in a less obvious way. It's also not as tense. The vocals of Habits and About You sound tiny. The vocals in Sex Tape drop out completely. The pads in Habits build tension toward each hit of the snare drum, then instantly drop out. The guitars in Girlfriend play just one chord in the very beginning of the section and then keep mostly quiet. So what do all of these have in common? They make you notice that something is missing. Either the bass, kick drum, snare drum, hi-hat, vocals, pad, or guitar. That's the key to writing imply attention. Give your listener a finger, and they'll want the whole hand. What you are effectively doing is giving them a peek at the next moment of gratification by hinting at it during the anticipation phase. This makes imply attention a fantastic alternative to regular attention that is very in. For arrangements using a lot of imply attention, check out Kid Cudi vs. Crooker's Day and Night or Iggy Azalea's Fancy. Another fascinating example of imply attention is a perfect circle's Rose. Listen to how the beginning builds for 37 whole seconds. This example is particularly interesting because it manages to keep the tension going for three consecutive sections. Implied tension is a little more complicated because it seems like a paradox at first. In order to build, we have to thin out the arrangement, which is of course the exact opposite of how we use hype to increase energy. So why is implied tension such a fantastic tool? Because it allows you to go down in hype while still keeping the listener hooked. There's no way around dropping your hype levels every now and then, so you can build them back up again. This is where implied tension can really shine. Take this rule as a guideline. Whenever you use the drop or surprise, as discussed in the chapter The Perfect Energy Curve, follow it up with some implied tension. How can we make our audience notice that something's missing? When I visited Venice Beach a couple of years ago, I watched a breakdancer jump a row of several bent-over spectators. The jump lasted only a second, but the build-up was more than 15 minutes. When we see a magician casually shuffle the cards in a spectacular way, when Robbie Williams dangerously twirls the microphone and catches it without raising an eyebrow, we want them to do it again. And of course, they never do. It's like saying, "Oh, this? Yeah, I do that sometimes, no biggie." Every performer knows there's no greater feeling than your audience waiting for you to do something and dragging out that moment forever. I call this a sting. Giving your audience a quick look at what you can do and immediately withdrawing. The more you sting your audience without giving them the actual thing, the more effective your implied tension will be. In practice, a sting could be a single bass drum kick in an otherwise drumless section, a series of very quick notes in an otherwise slow song, or a very loud note in a ballad. All of these tell us that more is to come. We're going to come back to this principle time and time again in the following chapters. Again, the idea is to noticeably leave out an instrument with an emphasis on noticeably. If it's not noticeable, you're just going down in hype, which is always a tricky move to pull off. Summary. Hype can be altered by adding or subtracting elements from the frequency spectrum and by trading space. Tension can be introduced by doing the same halfway through a section. Implied tension is a kind of tension that is based on noticeably stripping out elements of a section. It can be increased through the use of stings, short moments where you give the audience what they want. Harmony. Harmony in commercial music has seen better days. I'm sure you've heard Axis of Awesome's Four Chords and are already aware of this, what some might call, problem. This is part of the reason why we will focus on triads and power chords in this book. No options, tensions, clusters, or upper structures. If you are interested in how to use these chords with the addiction formula, I'm sure you can figure out how to apply them yourself after reading this chapter. In fact, I'm not intending to teach you anything new in this chapter, but rather want to show you how you can use what you already know to tell your story, or ride your energy curve. Part 1. Hype in harmony. Chords, as any other songwriting element, can be used to set hype levels. Voicings. We already know this principle from the previous chapter on arrangement. The fuller the texture, the higher the hype. A wide voicing will lead to a higher hype level, a close voicing to a lower one. Refer to the list of hype levels in the chapter on arrangement to determine how full your voicing is. Key changes. Changing the key for a new section is the most dramatic increase of hype possible in songwriting. It should be used very sparingly, so maybe once or twice on an album, because it is such a big move. You are literally moving your home. Where do you go? Up is the most popular choice, typically one or two half steps. Three and four work and sound very dramatic, but anything more is pointless, and keep your singer's vocal range in mind. Part 2. Tension in harmony. Interestingly enough, the quality of a chord doesn't have any influence in hype. The chord's quality only becomes important when we look at tension. When I talked about tension in the very first chapter on building your energy curve, this is what probably popped into your head. And indeed, chords can be used very effectively to create tension. First, let's decide which chords are of interest to us. Here are the 10 most popular chords in hit songs in order. The 5, 4, 1, 6, 2, 3, 3 major, 2 major, and the 6 major. To wrap our heads around tension, we begin by dividing a progression into three parts. A beginning, a middle, and an alligator. An end. We will start with the beginning, so we're looking at the first chord of a progression. There are three types of starting chords that determine the feel of a section. Tonic chords. In major, that's the 1, 6, 3, 6 major, 3 major. And in minor, it's the 1, 6, and 3. Subdominant chords. In major, 4, 2, and 2 major. In minor, 4 and 4 major. And lastly, dominant chords. In major, 5, flat 7 major. In minor, 5 major, 7, flat 2 major, and 5 minor. The category the first chord falls into determines how tense a section is. Dominant sections, sections that start with the dominant chord, are the most tense, followed by subdominant sections. Tonic sections have no natural tension. Note, knowing this is useless to you if you can't hear it. The best way to get the three categories into your head is by listening to 12-bar blues. It consists of three sections. One tonic, 1-1-1-1, one subdominant, 4-4-1-1, and one dominant, 5-5-1-5. So go listen to James Brown's Papa's Got a Brand New Bag and pay attention to how each four bars, the tension changes. From tonic to subdominant to dominant. Examples. 1-3-6-4, as in Jesse J's Price Tag, is a tonic section. 4-1-4-1, as in the chorus to Taylor Swift's Mine, is a subdominant section. 5-4-5-4, as in the pre-chorus to Idina Menzel's Let It Go, is a dominant section. The middle of a progression can also be used to introduce tension. This usually doesn't happen before the penultimate chord, though, as in the following example. 1-4-5-sus-5. Here the suspended chord builds tension toward the dominant chord. In C, this progression would read C, F, Jesus 4, G. There are other ways to introduce tension earlier in a progression, although they are very rare in pop music. But just to be complete, here's two examples for progressions that build tension from the second chord onwards. Dominant chains. 1, sub 5, 5 of the 5, 5. In C, this would read C, E flat 7, D7, G7. Listen to what this sounds like. Descending bass lines. For example, in C minor, C minor, C minor slash B, C minor slash B flat, C minor slash A, C minor slash A flat, C minor slash G, G. Listen to what this sounds like. The end of a progression is the most common place for creating tension. To build tension at the end of a progression, you want to use a concept known as home and away. The one in major or six in minor are your home, the chords with the lowest tension that your music keeps coming back to for resolution. Everything else is away from home. The further you go, the more you build tension. So here's our 10 most popular chords and how far from home they are, starting with home and moving further and further away. Major. 1, 6, 6 major, 3, 3 major, 2, 2 major, 4, flat 7 major, 5, minor, 1, 6, 2 major, 4, 4 major, 5 minor, flat 2 major, 7, 5. So for example, the chord progression 1-6 has very low tension. Six, five has very high tension. One, six, four, two has medium tension. And one, four, five, six has very low tension. Part 3. Implied tension in harmony. Implied tension can be achieved by leaving out important notes of the chord, such as the root note, also known as inversions, or the third, which results in a power chord. Note that leaving out a note has to be noticeable for it to imply tension. So for example, if you want to add implied tension to a section using power chords, make sure that the section right before it uses full triads. If you want to add a sting to your harmony, here's a couple of examples. In a song that uses power chords only, let the vocal melody hit a third every now and then to hint at the full chords. If you're only using minor chords, sting the audience with an occasional major chord. And if your song consists of triads only, surprise them with a quick jazz progression. As long as it works with your song, anything goes. That wraps up harmony for us. In the next chapter, we will look at the most important element for creating tension with the addiction formula. Summary. Height can be altered by the wideness of a voicing and through key changes. Tension can be introduced at the beginning, middle, and end of a chord progression. Implied tension can be achieved by leaving out important notes of the chord, such as the root note or the third, which gives us inversions or power chords respectively. Rhythm. Rhythm is the most useful element for lyricless storytelling, period. Therefore, if you want to master songwriting, you absolutely have to be proficient in this. There's no good song without rhythm.